Hello and welcome to the Monocle Culture Show. Our topic today is the winner of the Pulitzer Prize for Fiction this year, and perhaps an unlikely one at that, not because of the calibre of the writing, but because it's funny. The title is simply Less, and it's the fifth novel by the American writer Andrew Sean Greer. Less was published last year and has been released as a slender paperback this summer, making it an excellent read to take on your travels throughout August. And it comes recommended by both of my guests today, who are Andy Miller, author of The Year of Reading Danger, and co-host of the Backlisted podcast, and the journalist and critic Lucy Scholes, whose writing can be found everywhere from The Guardian to Granta. So the book we're discussing is called Less, named after its protagonist, Arthur Less. Now, he is a novelist approaching 50 whose career hasn't quite gone to plan and who's haunted by an ex-boyfriend who's about to get married. When the wedding invitation arrives, Less needs any excuse to not go and begins to accept other invitations he's received to various literary events all over the world. We follow Arthur on his global tour as he grapples with past relationships and matters of the heart. Lucy and Andy, welcome to the programme.
Hello!
Hi, it's great to be here.
This is what we want, a zoo format. This is exactly, this is how we roll. So Less won the Pulitzer Prize for fiction. It was published last year, won the prize this year. Lucy, we're not necessarily with the Pulitzer in the realms of the funny. So this was a bit of a shock in literary circles, I presume.
I think it was, yeah. I think, well, the book was published last year and in America, when it first came out. And it did get great reviews over there. People loved it.
Yeah.
But I don't think anyone was expecting it to go ahead and scoop the prize. And then, because it was such a success, it was then published over here in the aftermath of the win, with everyone leading reviews going, what a surprise, this one, one of the world's leading, you know, literary prizes.
And we were kind of joking about it in the green room before we came in here, Andy, about the kind of, as you're saying, it's not well known for being a laugh factory.
The Pulitzer.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's really interesting, this. This book was published in the UK the week after the Bollinger Everyman Prize for comic fiction, which is awarded every year, announced that no funny books had been published in the last
That's right.
year, and therefore there would be no prize, apart from the one that won the Pulitzer.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm not saying that they haven't had their eye on the ball this year, but it surprised
Bit of an oversight.
Me. It surprised me that the oversight had been made. The other thing I think is, the other point is worth making, is the Man Booker has been won in the last couple of years by really funny books written by American novelists. So The Sellout by Paul Beattie is a brilliantly funny book, in my opinion. It actually exhaustingly funny. I think you have to put it down every 30 pages and go and get some air.
Walk.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Lincoln and the Bardo, which is a terrific novel, but that's a funny book too. So there is a sort of, I don't know if three books makes a trend, but there is a very welcome move there to acknowledge humorous writing in literary circles, which, to be honest with you, does not happen very often.
So the comedy in Less is at the expense of our protagonist, Arthur Less, who's a down-on-his-luck novelist who decides to take up these invitations, as he said in the blurb, to kind of avoid having to be a guest or having to sort of be in the same country as his ex-boyfriend, as his ex-boyfriend marries his new boyfriend. And so we've got this kind of, we've got a nice kind of rhythm, we've got a kind of nice reason for him to bounce from city to city and have, you know, affair and relationship and weird aborted book reading and all these kind of different things that he does. And a lot of the comedy comes from, as I say, his expense, but also kind of at the expense of some of the self-importance of the literary world, the book world, what's expected of you when you stand on a stage. You guys are both kind of either fully in or partially in this literary world. How good is it at lampooning the world of books, Lucy?
I think it's very good. I think there's lots of it that is very recognisable, to the extent that I think when I first read it, I did wonder whether it would be quite the hit outside of the literary world that it is in. Because there's always that worry with books that
really
skewer
true.
Books about books.
Books about books, right? Because I get it, Andy gets it, but then does somebody else get it in quite the same way? However, I think it is very good at the sort of picture the literary world, but I also think there's a lot in there that you can get.
It's very accessible. It kind of explains it, and it's exactly. Like you're a guy on a stage having to say something he doesn't want to say.
Exactly. And he's not. And I think also the character of Arthur Less is a very he's very likable from the start, and he's not. I mean, obviously part of the comedy comes from the fact that he is not hugely successful. So I think anyone in a variety of kind of careers can probably, you know, sympathise and empathise with that. They don't have to be writers to get it.
Yeah. The comedy is about status.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's a quote here really near the beginning of the book where he's doing an event for a science fiction writer called H.H.H. Mandan, which in itself made me laugh out loud. The writer is called H.H.H. Mandan, which is repeated. See, the more I say it, the funnier it gets.
It is about rhythm, you're right.
So it's about rhythm, it's about status. So there's a brilliant paragraph which goes, "Why him? Why did they ask Arthur Less, a minor author? Well, Less knows why. It's no mystery. A calculation was made. What literary writer would agree to prepare for an interview and yet not be paid?" I think, and then it goes on to say, it had to be someone terribly desperate. Right? So there's an ongoing, really brilliant joke, I think. Yes, joke. I think one of the engines of the comedy and the empathy in the book is that you're dealing with somebody who's doing what is superficially a role that readers of the book might aspire to.
Yeah.
He's a writer and he's on his third novel and he's travelling the world and he's appearing at literary festivals and he's interviewing famous authors, and yet at the same time, without bashing you over the head with it, here's this poor man kind of bumbling his way through these terrible things, a series of events which seem to have been hand-tooled to make him feel as inferior as possible. And that seems to me perfectly factually accurate in my own experience. But my favourite line in this book is there's a brilliant bit in the third or fourth chapter where he... I think I'm right in saying he's being interviewed on a panel and one of the other authors hasn't turned up and the chair says to him, "It's okay, I'll talk about my work."
Yes.
and so the chair and he go on stage and the chair talks about his work for 15 minutes and then he turns to Les and he says, "Arthur, now, we were talking backstage about mediocrity."
That is one of the boards that this show is made on, is exactly that, is bringing the green room conversations into Studio 2.
Yeah.
You know it makes sense. And it is good on that. It reminded me of, do you know Jeff in Venice by Jeff Dyer?
Mm.
It reminded me of that kind of the engine for the book is a man sort of walking sort of guilelessly through his life and through these various kind of international sort of situations. This is centred around the Venice Biennale, but it could easily be a book about books, or it could, you know, and it kind of reminded me of that. What happens to him are things are charming or things are ridiculous or these little trysts and relationships spring up. And I thought that was, it kind of had that same sort of charm to it, where things happen to a guy and he's always trying to kind of do something else, I suppose. It kind of reminded me of that. And Martin Amis is The Information, a really good book about the literary world and about the competitiveness between novelists and all the rest of it. I kind of got that vibe. In fact, there is a thinly disguised Martin Amis character in it called Foster's Lancing or something, who turns up and is angry at this literary event in Italy, who walks in heavy-browed.
Do you think he's a thinly disguised Martin Amis character?
Yes, he's a complete, because he sort of walks in with his heavy brow and irritably asks everyone for a cigarette in his sort of drawly kind of Oxford accent.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, he's
you're
good. Right. Foster's right. Lancet is a good one. There are some amusing bits in the book where fellow novelists, Finlay Dwyer, who's a successful gay novelist, like Arthur is, an unsuccessful one, kind of gives him a dressing down backstage at a literary event and says to him, "It's not that you're a bad writer, it's that you're a bad gay." And so there are sort of all sorts of things that aren't left to sort of chance for the reader to kind of think what kind of guy this poor Arthur Less is. There aren't that many punches but left unpulled in this one, right?
No, it's true. But at the same time, it's sort of, I don't know, it's weighed, the balance is kind of weighed up by an awful lot of sort of warmth and affection that we were talking about before, from the, you know, from the narrator for the character, you know, and also he's not quite as unlucky as he thinks he is for quite a lot of this book, I found. You know, rereading it again before coming on the show to discuss it, a second time round, I kept noticing that actually how things are working out for him in quite an interesting it's and gentle way.
We see it from his point of view, yeah. But it's how he feels
exactly.
about these things.
And I think once you, you know, when I first read it, I think I was very in his kind of headset and, you know, thinking about, sorry, his mindset and thinking from his point of view. But once I knew how the story was going to develop, going back to it and seeing it slightly differently, you can pick up these wonderful little nuances where the narrator comes in. And I don't want to spoil it for people who haven't read it, but yeah. I think the kind of the narrator's voice is very key to what's going on here and becomes more so as the work goes on. And there's a real kindness there, which I think is quite rare as well to find in fiction.
And he's quite an attractive guy. I mean, he's kind of always kind of taking the piss out of himself, saying that he's kind of like, you know, this lumbering kind of over tall.
Yeah, but he's
And he's obviously a good. There's one of my favourite chapters is the French one where he goes to a party, he cancels his flight, or he does that thing where you bump yourself off a flight to take the €200, and he goes back into Paris and he ends up at a party.
That's because he wants to post the tax rebate, isn't it? So it's a wonderful long story where he has to go through this long drawn out process.
And he allows himself to buy a try hard leather jacket, doesn't he? Is that right?
He dresses in that wonderful costume. He thinks he looks so wonderful and attractive, and he realises that then he just looks like an American dressed, pretending to be a Parisian. Yeah. And so, you know, but at the same time...
And then he meets Javier.
But he does meet a very nice man that he has a sort of, you know, an intrigue with that evening. So,
and I thought that was very romantic. As you said, there's a lot
really
of warmth
romantic.
And tenderness. I thought that was really romantic. That,
it
and
is
really
romantic.
Well written, that piece particularly.
I'm really... one of the other things that I really like about the book, and I found it very moving for not uncritical and personal reasons, is that Arthur Less, what's triggering his flight around the world is that he's not only finished his relationship has finished with a younger man, but he's about to turn 50. Genuinely, by a total coincidence, I started reading this about 2 days before I turned 50. And I read the scene where he turns 50 on the day I turned 50. On the train on the way up to a very nice restaurant in London. And I found it was just one of those moments where it was the right book at the right moment for me. It has this lovely sense that although, you know, the first... more than half is over, there's still lots of fun coming. And as one approaches landmark birthdays, one tends not to wander around thinking, oh boy, more fun is on the way. one tends to think about something else that might be coming along the track.
But isn't that also one of the great things that it does, that it's a book about a middle-aged man, which is something we don't get so much. I mean, that exactly that scene, the birthday scene you're talking about, there's that wonderful line, isn't there, where well, he describes celebrating his birthday and the miracle of having survived.
I think
it was like life's humiliations and disappointments and heartaches and missed opportunities, bad dads and bad jobs and bad sex and bad drugs and all the trips and mistakes and the faceplants of life to have made it to 50. And it's just that kind of celebration of that, you know, you've got there, and that in itself is quite an achievement. And I think for me, at least, it was quite rare to find a character who was embracing their own middle age, or a novel that embraced kind of middle age.
And contrasts it with, there are two other, we don't want to spoil, but there are two other significant characters. He's the main two partners, romantic partners he's had in his life.
Yes.
One of whom is significantly younger and one of whom is significantly older. So you have a constant contrast going on in the book, very cleverly done. This is why it won the Pulitzer, in fact. But it's true, you know, it's constantly shifting perspective on what you think middle age is when you're young, what you think middle age is
when
you're old, and what you think right now when it's happening, right?
Yeah.
So I found that really... And it's really lightly done as well.
Oh, yeah, it doesn't kind of rub your face in it, but it's there and it's sort of, I don't know, woven into the fabric of the prose in quite an interesting and quite a moving way, yes.
It's all on the same page a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Which I know is people always, it's sort of like a pull quote that, kind of is meant to kind of be illustrative of book's quality or maybe accessible quality particularly, you know, it'll make you laugh and cry all on the same page.
It does, though.
But it really does. It's obviously hugely difficult to do that, I suppose, or whether it is something that is simply a write-through and it is a skill that is something like loquacity, or whether it is something that is all about structure and fine-tuning and you know, the charm of the word processor, who knows. But I found it was really good on that. I wanted to ask you both, before we kind of go on to our further reading section, what it made us think about, whether, because we talked about it being laugh out loud funny. Did you, and we all think it's a sort of charming book. Did you find, is it laugh out loud funny? And is that a quality that we should look for in something that is a comedy novel?
I personally didn't laugh out loud at it, but I did find it very funny. I think maybe I'm just a hard audience, but I thought it was witty and clever, and there were lots of bits that I sort of wanted to share with other people.
Or reread while you're reading it.
Yeah, and I think it's just rare that a book makes me actual kind of chortle. But I think it is very funny. But I also think a lot of my enjoyment from it came from the warmth more than anything.
Yeah.
It almost sounds a bit pathetic, but it's that general warmth about the book which, you know, feeds into the comedy and feeds into the kind of sad romance.
And where you kind of miss it when it's gone, like all good books. Where you kind of, you are comfortable inhabiting the world of these characters and even the geography. He finds himself in some pretty toothsome places all over the world. And that's a comfortable place in which to dwell for a day or two.
But I also think, this is slightly off the point, but I do think one really important thing about it as well is that to have a novel about the central protagonist is a gay man, and it's a lovely book. This is not a story about tragedy. This is not a story. And of course, there's a kind of meta element in the novel itself, because he, as a gay novelist, is writing quite sad, tragic stories about gay men not finding their, And I think that's another really interesting level going on here, that actually Greer has written a novel which is just delightful and is funny, and like his protagonist has suffered, but in the way that everyone suffers, right? Yeah, it's not a kind of, you've had to suffer through.
I agree.
And I think that in itself, it shouldn't be the kind of thing that we have to point out, but it is quite rare to find, you know, novels that don't have straight characters that allow them this amount of sort of freedom and, you know, sort of life like that.
I have to say that I respectfully agree, disagree with my colleague.
Disagree.
It did make me laugh out loud. But then I tend to express delight in things that I enjoy with laughter. So there's different kinds of laughter.
You make me laugh out loud.
So hang on.
But no. You know what I mean, though.
Like, so there's a line here.
This isn't a joke, but this made me laugh out loud. Okay. Les is on a plane. He's thinking about being on a flight in the past.
Okay.
And he's thinking about a thing that happened, and he's remembering a young man who had said something to him. The young man stared at his lover and, before taking a sip of his beer, said, "Arthur Less is the bravest person I know." Arthur thinks of this on every flight. It always ruins everything. It has ruined this flight from New York to Mexico City, which is well on the way to ruining itself. Now, I laughed with delight at that, because I could practically feel Andrew Sean Greer probably worked at that one line for 3 weeks or something to get that to bounce along in just the right way. This book is so well written.
It's true.
Line for line.
Yeah.
Right? It's so exquisitely well done in terms of, not just in the structure as we talked about, and it is warm,
like,
and it
the
has
prose
these,
is beautiful
these,
as
the
well.
Prose is really beautiful. I know we sound perhaps overly esoteric when we start burbling about how beautiful the prose is, but it's so perfectly pitched.
There are things you want to read out loud.
If he'd got it wrong, this is the point, if he'd got the prose wrong, the whole thing wouldn't work.
Yeah.
Balance between just the right amount of humour and a little bit of poetry and, as you suggest, compassion for all the characters involved is the thing that makes the whole thing work together as one.
Yeah.
And it's really joyful, this book.
Andy, you wanted to talk on the subject of Less and things that it reminded you of, qualities that it shares in common with, and this is Francis Plug, How to Be a Public Author by Paul Ewan, which I hadn't heard about until you recommended it.
Okay, so this is this novel is by an author called Paul Ewan, and it's called Francis Plug, How to Be a Public Author.
And it's a novel?
Yes, because it in theory, is a book called How to Be a Public Author by a gardener come novelist called Francis Plug. And this was published by an independent publisher called Gallybegger about 5 years ago. This is the funniest British novel published in the last 10 years. And
that's high praise.
Yeah.
I'm an expert.
So Trust me.
So that's why I'm saying it. I think this is an absolutely magical novel. Like Less, it is set in the world of book publishing. Mm-hmm. Unlike Less, it does not change the names. So what Francis Plug is a series of accounts of Francis going to book events in bookshops or literary festivals, Hay on Wye, for instance, Waterstones in Piccadilly.
The classics.
Yeah, and trying to get the autograph of every winner of the Booker Prize in a first edition of their Booker Prize winning novel.
Uh-huh.
What we learn as I show you this page is Paul Ewan actually went and did it. So every chapter is based on an actual encounter with an author such as Hilary Mantel.
But he did it under the name Francis Plug.
Here we go. Here's a copy of Wolf Hall, which has been signed by Hilary Mantel. Francis Plug, with good wishes, Hilary Mantel. And when he meets Zadie Smith,
that's so good.
When he meets Zadie Smith, she goes, Francis Plug, that's an unusual name. Yes, it's mine, ha-ha, I said. And on it goes. And the reason why I love this book is, first of all, Paul is a brilliant, brilliant writer. Paul Ewan is such a funny writer. But this is actually a wonderful book, similar to Less, not the same as Less, about this weird dance of complicity that goes on between authors, publishers, and the public about what we expect writers to be when they're not writing.
What, how their public face, yes. Their performative self.
How to be a public author.
Okay. Thanks for saying that as if I hadn't listened the first time.
Francis, how to be a public author. Well, it does what it says on the tin, Robert, doesn't it? So Francis starts the book by saying, and again, this is what I love about this. You could read this as being funny, or you can read this as being factually accurate, or both, right? This is the introduction to the book. Bookish folk aren't what they used to be. Introverted, reserved, studious. There was a time when bookish folk would steer clear of trendy bars, dinner occasions and gatherings. Sorry, dinner occasions is making me corpse. Any social or public encounters would be avoided at all costs because these activities were very unbookish. Bookish folk preferred to stay in or to sit alone in a quiet pub, reading a good book or getting some writing done. Writers, in fact, perhaps epitomise these bookish traits most strongly. At least they used to. These days, bookish people such as writers...
Okay.
Such as writers are commonly found on stage, headlining festivals, or being interviewed on TV. And the book proceeds from there. The book proceeds as a guidebook for prospective writers about how to be a successful public writer.
Right.
This is what you need to do at events.
Do you know if any of the authors that he got to sign the books, what their opinions on this book?
Hilary Mantel gave this book one of the best blurbs of all time.
Did she?
And yeah. She is in it.
Oh, okay. Amazing.
I don't know why this is funny, but it definitely is. There's a bit where Francis has tracked down the extremely reclusive John Berger, author of the novel G, winner of the Booker Prize in the early 70s, I think I'm right in saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's doing it very serious. He's doing events at the ICA. And John Berger, he has a more odd conversation because Francis likes a drink. That's the other thing. Yeah, he has a fighting on where John Berger says to Francis, do you believe in goblins? And Francis says, yes. That's what I don't know. I was on a bus. I laughed very loudly.
Yeah, it's working.
In delight and hilarity.
I've just ordered this book.
I'm going to go and buy it after this.
It sounds so totally up my street.
You sold it to me completely.
Yeah, yeah. That's a fantastic recommendation. It's a dead cert, I think.
Yeah.
Lucy, you want to take us on a bit more of a tangent.
I feel like my recommendation's going to... It's got nothing compared to Andy's.
Well, we were talking about how how sort of refreshing it was that Les had won the Pulitzer. It's a funny book.
It's true. Well, that's where I took my recommendation taken from. Because when I was reading the book, I was obviously very surprised that it had won. That seemed to be a lot of the discussion around it, and it just got me thinking a little bit more about how comedy in general, whether it's in films or books, is just not taken so seriously as kind of straight drama. And I'm sure there are a million examples that we could use for this, so mine is certainly not the only one. But on this point, I was thinking in particular of a film I remember seeing back when it came out in 2015 called Maggie's Plan by the American director Rebecca Miller. And I had this conversation exactly with friends at the time who I saw it with, because the film stars Julianne Moore in a supporting actress role, and she plays a Danish academic based in New York, and she has the most hilarious accent. She plays it completely straight, but it's incredibly comedic, and she's hilarious. And yet this is only a year after she won the Oscar for Still Alice, you know, the story about the woman suffering from Alzheimer's.
Of course
she wins an Oscar for that, but if you actually think about it, I think, you know,
so the better acting is done in this, like, Danish.
Exactly. Yeah. I feel in a weird way the better acting is done, because she pulls off playing this completely comedic, very odd woman in this film. And yet she's never going to have got an Oscar nomination for that, because it would never even be considered the type of acting that would get a supporting actress, you know, Oscar.
And we were saying before we came in here, that annoys all of us.
Yeah, I think
so. I mean,
so.
In terms of book world, in terms of editing, in terms of, you know, working, you know, in the book trade as well, Andy. Mm. That's one of those things. What do we do? Is there a lot of head scratching? What do we do with this comedy novel? Is it laugh out loud, or is it just a bit funny? Is it a satire? What do we do with it?
It's true in film, in the medium that Lucy's talking about. I mean, I was thinking about Ralph Fiennes. You know, Ralph Fiennes should have won the Best Actor Oscar for Grand Budapest Hotel. That is a magnificent performance.
Yeah. There's a very good example.
That is a magnificent and difficult performance to pull off. It's not about, you know, it's funny, but it's funny.
Funny isn't easy to pull off.
Yeah. Right. I'm thinking as well about the book. A longlist has just been published.
Yeah.
It doesn't have, and we can all, you know, I'm saying this as an example. It is a book, it is a novel I really like. It doesn't have Old Baggage by Lissa Evans on it.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a terrific novel, and I would argue one of the reasons it's not on there is it's a funny novel. Yeah. It's not only funny, it does a number of other things as well. But, yes, there is a certain sense that if something is funny, it must be clowned in some way rather than worked at.
And it's so, but funny is so difficult.
Exactly.
Funny
but is it's so not difficult. It's not considered as valuable or as kind of there's some I don't know, gravitas is the wrong word to use, obviously, and maybe with relation to funny, but I think to pull off, like we were saying, for, you know, Greer to have pulled off this novel, to have made it so kind of wonderfully kind of witty and funny, it's a really hard thing to do. Like, so few people can write like that. To pull off a kind of, you know, a great comedic performance, again, is really hard. It's all about timing. It's about how you, you know, so many things take into account, and why these things aren't considered so valuable in the world of sort of prizes and the most prestigious prizes, I find sort of
there's
odd.
Also a subset of a subset within here, which is that certainly, I mean, it's my feeling there's a certain kind of male comic writer, I won't name names, but that there is a sort of, you know, sort of frosty respect for the big beast. Even smaller than that subset, there are female writers like Lissa Evans or Nina Stibbe or Marion Keyes, all of whom really know how to turn a brilliant gag and work hard at turning a brilliant gag, who get no respect for it at all. Also, because guess what? They tend to sell appreciable quantities of books.
Oh, right, yeah. So
they're popular too, and that works against them. Yeah. I mean, we're sounding chippy now, but I'm just... This is merely based on 30 years' experience.
Yeah.
So...
Kids. There's the sort of serious business of comedy, which is where I wonder what this new Laurel and Hardy movie is going to be like with Steve Coogan in and John C. Reilly.
Yeah.
But, you know, I haven't seen a trailer for it yet. I don't think one exists, but I have that horrible fear that it might be about the serious business of comedy, the tortured aspects of these two people.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of something like Man in the Moon with Jim Carrey as Andy Kaufman, how he was really funny as Andy Kaufman and really nuts off stage when he wouldn't get out of character. So it was a funny film about it was showing the tortured nature of being funny, but also how funny being funny can be as well. Do you know what I mean? It's a tricky one. That brings us to the end of the show. Less by Andrew Sean Greer is out now. It's published by Abacus. Thank you very much to my guests, Lucy Scholes and Andy Miller, and to my producer, Holly Fisher. We'll be back next week with a sharktastic show as we take the latest ocean thriller, The Meg, on. But for the time being, from me, Robert Bound, thank you very much for tuning in.